Cinder nodded in understanding, perhaps too forcefully. "Of course," she said, backing away toward the massive doors. "Now that Nancy's back, I'll just... Would you like to walk with me?" She paused mid-step. "Excuse me?" "You can tell me what you found. What was wrong with her?" She wrung her hands, unsure if the tingling on her skin was delight or something closer to dread. The knowledge of the Queen's presence lingered, unavoidable. Still, she found herself fighting down a stupid grin. "Sure, of course." Kai seemed relieved as he cocked his head toward a wide corridor. "So, what was wrong with her?" he said as they made their way through the majestic lobby. "A chip," she said. "The direct communication chip interrupted her power connection, I think. Removing it was all it took to wake her up." "Direct communication chip?" Cinder scanned the people milling around them, none of whom seemed at all interested in the Crown Prince. Nevertheless, she lowered her voice when she answered. "Right, the DCOM. Didn't you install it?" He shook his head. "No, we use DCOMs for international conferencing, but besides that, I don't think I've ever seen one. Why would someone put one in an android?" Cinder pressed her lips, thinking of the things Nancy had been saying when she'd awoken. Nancy had probably been relaying that same information when she'd gone unconscious, most likely over the direct communication link. "But who received it?" "Cinder?" She pulled on the hem of her glove. She wanted to tell him that she knew about his research, that someone else probably knew too, but she couldn't say anything in the middle of the crowded palace corridors. "Someone must have had access to her, right before she malfunctioned, in order to install the chip. Why would anyone install her with a faulty chip in the first place?" "I don't think it was entirely faulty. It does seem that some data was sent over the link before Nancy shut down." "What?" Kai hesitated. Cinder noticed the nervousness in his eyes, the tensing of his posture. He craned his head closer to her, barely slowing his pace. "What kind of information can be sent over direct comms?"
"Anything that can be sent over the net.
But if someone was accessing her remotely like that, they couldn't, I mean, she would have to allow access to any information they received, right?" Cinder opened her mouth, paused, closed it again. "I don't know. I'm not sure how a direct comm would function in an android, especially one that wasn't equipped for it in the first place. But there's a chance that whoever put that chip in her was hoping to gather information, possibly specific information." Kai's gaze was distant as they crossed an enclosed glass bridge into the research wing. "So, how do I find out who put that chip in her and what they learned?" Cinder gulped. "I tried to initiate the link, but it seemed to have been disabled. I'll keep trying, but at this point, I have no way of knowing who was on the other end. As for what they learned..." Catching on to the hint in her tone, Kai stopped walking and turned to face her, eyes burning. Cinder lowered her voice, speaking in a rush.
"I know what it is you were looking for. I heard some of the information Nancy had discovered."
"I don't even know what she discovered yet." She nodded.
"It's interesting."
His gaze brightened, and he inched toward her, craning his neck.
"She's alive, isn't she? Does Nancy know where to find her?"
Cinder shook her head, fear clawing at her, knowing that Lavanna was somewhere in these very walls.
"We can't talk about this here, and Nancy will know more than I do anyway."
Kai frowned and stepped back, but she could see his thoughts still churning as he proceeded to the elevator bank and gave directions to the android there. "So," he said, folding his arms while they waited, "you're telling me that Nancy has some important information, but some unknown person may also have that information?"
"I'm afraid so," said Cinder. "Also, the chip itself was unusual. It wasn't silicon or carbon. It was like no chip I'd ever seen before."
Kai peered at her, brows knit.
"How so?"
Cinder held up her fingers as if pinching the chip between them, envisioning it.
Size and shape, it looked just like a normal chip, but it was shimmery, like tiny gemstones, pearlescent, kind of. The color drained from Kai's face. A second later, he shut his eyes with a grimace. It's lunar.
What? Are you sure?
Their ships are made out of the same stuff. I'm not sure what it is, but... He cursed, kneading his thumb across his temple. It must have been Sybil, or her guard. They arrived days before Nancy broke down.
Sybil?
Levana's thaumaturge, the minion that does all her dirty work. Cinder felt like a clamp was suffocating her lungs. If the information had gone to this Sybil, it had almost certainly gone to the Queen.
Elevator B for His Imperial Highness, said the android as the doors of the second elevator opened. Cinder followed Kai into it, unable to resist glancing up at the camera on the ceiling. If Lunars had infiltrated a royal android, they could have infiltrated anything in the palace. She brushed a loose strand of hair behind her ear, her paranoia forcing her to act normal as the doors closed.
I take it things aren't going too well with the Queen? Kai grimaced, as if it were the most painful topic in the world, and fell back against the wall. Cinder's heart stirred, watching as his royal demeanor slid off him. She dropped her gaze to the toes of her boots.
I didn't think it was possible to hate anyone as much as I hate her. She's evil.
Cinder flinched. Do you think it's safe to... I mean, if she put this chip in your android...
Understanding flickered over Kai's face. He looked up at the camera, then shrugged. I don't care. She knows I hate her. Trust me, she's not trying very hard to change that.
Cinder licked her lips. I saw what she did to the protesters. Kai nodded. I shouldn't have let her face them. Once it gets on the net screens about how fast she controlled them, the city will be chaos.
He folded his arms, scrunching his shoulders up toward his ears. Plus, she's now under the impression that we're intentionally harboring lunar fugitives.
Her heart skipped.
Really? I know, it's absurd. The last thing I want is more power-hungry lunars running rampant in my country. Why would I? Oh, it's so frustrating.
Cinder rubbed her arms, suddenly nervous. She was the reason Levana believed Kai was harboring lunars. She hadn't considered that being noticed by the Queen could put Kai in jeopardy too. When Kai fell silent, she risked a glance at him. He was staring at her hands. Cinder snapped them up against her chest, checking the gloves, but they were fine.
Do you ever take those off? He asked.
No. Kai tilted his head, peering at her, as if he could see right through the metal plate in her head. The intensity of his gaze didn't mellow.
I think you should go to the ball with me.
She clutched her fingers. His expression was too genuine, too sure. Her nerves tingled.
Stars, she muttered.
Didn't you already ask me that?
I'm hoping for a more favorable answer this time, and I seem to be getting more desperate by the minute.
How charming. Kai's lips twitched. Please.
Why?
Why not? I mean, why me?
Kai hooked his thumbs on his pockets. So if my escape hover breaks down, I'll have someone on hand to fix it?
She rolled her eyes and found herself unable to look at him again, staring instead at the red emergency button beside the doors.
I mean it. I can't go alone, and I really can't go with Levana.
Well, there are about 200,000 single girls in this city who would fall over themselves to have the privilege.
A hush passed between them. He wasn't touching her, but she could feel his presence, warm and overpowering. She could feel the elevator growing hot, despite the fact that her temperature gauge assured her it hadn't changed.
Cinder. She couldn't help it. She looked at him. Her defenses withered a bit upon encountering the openness in his brown eyes. His confidence had been replaced with worry, uncertainty. 200,000 single girls, he said. Why not you? Cyborg, lunar, mechanic. She was the last thing he wanted. She opened her lips, and the elevator stopped. I'm sorry, but trust me, you don't want to go with me. The doors opened and the tension released her. She rushed out of the elevator, head down, trying not to look at the small group of people waiting for an elevator.
Come to the ball with me.
She froze. Everyone in the hallway froze. Cinder turned back. Kai was still standing in elevator B, one hand propping open the door. Her nerves were frazzled, and all the emotions of the past hour were converging into a single, sickening feeling. Exasperation. The hall was filled with doctors, nurses, androids, officials, technicians, and they all fell into an awkward hush and stared at the prince and the girl in the baggy cargo pants he was flirting with. Flirting. Squaring her shoulders, she retreated back into the elevator and pushed him inside, not even caring that it was with her metal hand. Hold the elevator, he said to the android as the door shut them in. He smiled. That got your attention. Listen, she said. I'm sorry, I really am, but I can't go to the ball with you. You just have to trust me on that. He gazed down at the gloved hand splayed across his chest. Cinder pulled away, crossing her arms over her chest. Why? Why don't you want to go with me? She huffed. It's not that I don't want to go with you, it's that I'm not going at all. So you do want to go with me? Cinder locked her shoulders. It doesn't matter, because I can't. But I need you.
Need me?
Yes, don't you see? If I'm spending all my time with you, then Queen Levana can't rope me into any conversations or... He shuddered.
Dancing.
Cinder reeled back, her gaze losing focus. Queen Levana. Of course this was about Queen Levana. What had Peony told her, ages ago? Rumors of a marriage alliance?
Not that I have anything against dancing. I could dance. If you want to dance.
She squinted at him.
What?
Or not, if you don't want to, or if you don't know how, which is nothing to be ashamed of. She started to rub her forehead, a headache developing, but stopped when she realized her gloves were filthy. I really, really can't go, she said. You see, I don't have a dress. Audrey won't allow it, because Queen Levana would kill me. It's my sister.
Your sister?
She wet her throat and dropped her gaze to the polished blackwood floor. Even the elevators were exquisite in the palace. Yes, my little sister. She has the plague, and it just wouldn't be the same without her. And I can't go, won't go. I'm sorry. Cinder was surprised to find the words ringing true, even to her ear. She wondered if her lie detector would have gone off if it could see her. Kai slipped back against the wall, hair fringing his eyes. No, I'm sorry, I didn't know. You couldn't have. Cinder rubbed her palms down her sides. Her skin had grown hot beneath the gloves. Actually, there's something I'd like to tell you, if that's all right. He lifted his head, curious. I just think she'd like you to know about her is all. Her name is Peony. She's 14 and she's madly in love with you. His eyebrows rose. I just thought that if, by some crazy miracle, she might survive. Do you think you could ask her to dance? At the ball? Cinder's voice chafed her throat as she said it, knowing that crazy miracles didn't happen. But she had to ask. Kai's gaze burned into her, and he gave her a slow, determined nod. It would be my pleasure. She dipped her head. I'll let her know to look forward to it. From the edge of her gaze, Cinder saw Kai slip a hand into his pocket and ball it into a fist.
People are probably getting suspicious out there, said Cinder. The rumors will be spreading like mad.
She put an awkward chuckle into the statement, but Kai didn't match it.
When she dared to look up at him again, he was staring unfocused at the paneled wall behind her, his shoulders heavy.
Are you all right?
He started to nod, but stopped. Lavanna thinks she can play me like a puppet. His brow creased, and it just occurred to me that she might be right.
Cinder fidgeted with her gloves. How easy it was to forget who she was speaking to, and all the things he must have on his mind, things so much more important than her, even more important than Peony.
I feel like I'm going to ruin everything, he said.
You won't.
She itched to reach out to him, but held back, wringing her hands. You're going to be one of those emperors that everyone loves and admires.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean it. Look how much you care, how hard you're trying, and you're not even emperor yet. Besides, she folded her arms, burying her hands. It's not like you're alone. You have advisors and province reps and secretaries and treasurers and, I mean, really, how much harm can one man possibly do all on his own?
Kai half laughed. You're not really making me feel better, but I appreciate the effort.
He raised his eyes to the ceiling.
I shouldn't be telling you all this anyway. It isn't your problem to worry about. It's just, you're easy to talk to.
She shuffled her feet.
It is kind of my problem. I mean, we all have to live here.
You could move to Europe.
You know, I've actually been considering that lately.
Kai laughed again, the warmth returning to the sound.
If that's not a vote of confidence, I don't know what is.
She ducked her head. Look, I know you're royalty and all, but people are probably getting really impatient for this Her breath snagged as Kai leaned forward. So close she was sure for a heartbeat he meant to kiss her. She froze, a wave of panic crashing into her, and barely managed to look up. Instead of kissing her, he whispered,
Imagine there was a cure, but finding it would cost you everything. It would completely ruin your life. What would you do?
The warm air enclosed her, so close she could catch a faint, soapy smell coming from him. His eyes bored into hers, waiting, a tinge desperate. Cinder wet her mouth.
Ruin my life to save a million others?
It's not much of a choice. His lips parted. She had no choice but to look at them, and then immediately back into his eyes. She could almost count the black lashes around them, but then a sadness filtered into his gaze.
You're right. There's no real choice.
Her body simultaneously yearned to close the gap between them and push him away. The anticipation that warmed her lips made it impossible to do either.
Your Highness?
She tilted her face toward him, the subtlest of movements. She listened to his wavering breath, and this time, it was his eyes dropping to her lips.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm sure this is horribly inappropriate, but it seems that my life is about to be ruined.
Her brow drew together, questioning, but he didn't elaborate. His fingers, light as a breath, brushed her elbow. He craned his head. Cinder couldn't move, barely managing to wet her lips as her eyes slipped shut. Pain exploded in her head, racing down her spine. Cinder gasped and folded over, gripping her stomach. The world lurched. Acid burned her throat. Kai cried out and caught her as she stumbled forward, easing her onto the elevator floor. Cinder shuddered against him, lightheaded. The pain was doused as quickly as it had started. Cinder lay panting, hunched over Kai's arm. His voice began to filter past her eardrums. Her name, again and again, muffled words. Are you all right? What happened? What did I do? She was hot, her hands sweating in the glove, her face burning, like before when Dr. Erland had touched her. What was happening to her? She licked her lips. Her tongue was cotton in her mouth.
I'm all right, she said, wondering if it were true. It's gone. I'm fine.
She squeezed her eyes shut and waited, afraid that the slightest movement would bring the pain back again.
Kai's fingers pressed against her brow, her hair. Are you sure? Can you move?
She attempted a nod and forced herself to look at him.
Kai gasped and jerked away, his hand freezing inches from Cinder's brow. Fear clamped her gut. Was her retina display showing?
What? She asked, ducking her face behind her hand, running nervous fingers over her skin, her hair.
What is it?
Nothing. When she dared meet Kai's gaze again, he was blinking rapidly, confusion filling his eyes.
Your Highness?
No, it was nothing. His lips turned upward, unconvincingly.
I was seeing things.
What? He shook his head. It was nothing. Here. He stood and coaxed her up beside him. Maybe we should see if the doctor can squeeze you into his busy schedule.
Chapter 25. Kai received two comms between the time they left the elevator and the time they reached Dr. Erlan's office. Cinder knew because she could hear the chime from his belt. But he didn't answer them. He insisted on helping her down the hallway, despite her protests that she could walk just fine, despite the curious stares of passers-by. Curious stares did not seem to bother the prince half so much as they bothered her. He didn't knock when they reached the office, and Dr. Erland, upon seeing who had burst in without announcement, did not seem surprised when he saw the prince.
It happened again, said Kai. Her fainting, whatever it is.
Dr. Erland's blue eyes switched to Cinder.
It's gone now, she said. I'm fine.
You're not fine, said Kai. What causes it? What can we do to make it stop?
I'll take a look at her, said Dr. Erland. We will see what can be done to keep it from happening again.
Kai seemed to think that this was an acceptable answer, but only barely. If you need funds to do the research, or special equipment, or anything.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, said the doctor. She probably just needs another adjustment.
Cinder clenched her teeth as her lie detector flashed at her. He was lying to the prince again. He was lying to her. But Kai didn't object, didn't question. He sucked in a deep breath and faced Cinder. The expression made her uncomfortable. The look that suggested she was a china doll, easily shattered. And perhaps, a hint of disappointment hung behind it all.
Really, I'm fine.
She could tell he was unconvinced, but had no way of arguing with her. His communicator dinged again. He finally glanced at it, then scowled and shut it off.
I need to go.
Clearly. The Prime Minister of Africa called a world leaders meeting, very dull and political. My advisor's about to have a breakdown. She raised her eyebrows in a look that she hoped conveyed how much she was all right with him leaving her. After all, he was a prince. The most powerful men and women on Earth had summoned him. She understood. And yet, he was still here, with her.
I'm fine, she said. Go away.
The worry in his eyes softened. He spun toward Dr. Erland and pulled something from his pocket, forcing it into the doctor's hand.
I also came to bring you this.
Dr. Erland slipped his spectacles on and held the glass vial up into the light. It was filled with clear liquid.
And this is
a gift from Queen Levana. She claims it's an antidote to letimosis. Cinder's heart lurched. Her gaze focused on the vial.
An antidote?
Peony.
Dr. Erland's complexion had drained, his eyes widening behind the glasses.
Is that so?
It could be a trick, I don't know. Supposedly, it's one dosage, enough for an adult male.
I see.
So, do you think you can duplicate it? If it is a cure?
Dr. Erlon drew his lips into a thin line and lowered the vial.
That depends on many things, Your Highness, he said, after a long pause. But I will try my best.
Thank you. Let me know as soon as you find anything.
Of course.
Relief loosened Kai's brow. He turned to Cinder. And you'll let me know if anything,
yes,
changes your mind about going to the ball? Cinder pressed her lips together. Kai's smile barely reached his eyes,
With a curt bow to the doctor, he was gone. Cinder retrained her gaze on the vial, enclosed in the doctor's fist. Desire coursed through her. But then she noticed the whitening of his knuckles and looked up, finding herself pinned under a stormy glare.
"What do you think you are doing here?"
he said, planting his free hand on the desk. She started, surprised by his vehemence.
"Don't you realize that Queen Lavanna is here, now, in this palace? Did you not understand when I told you to stay away? I had to bring the prince's android back. It's part of my job." "You're talking livelihood. I'm talking life. You are not safe here."
"For your information, that android could be a matter of life." She clenched her teeth, refraining from saying more. With a heavy sigh, she peeled the stifling gloves from her hands and slipped them into her pocket.
"All right, I'm sorry, but I'm here now." "You have to go, now. What if she asks to see the lab facilities?"
"Why would the queen care about your lab facilities?" She claimed the seat opposite Dr. Erland. He stayed standing. "Besides, it's too late. The queen already saw me." She expected the doctor to explode with this announcement, but instead, his frown was quickly replaced with horror. His thick eyebrows drew up beneath his cap. Slowly, he sank down into his seat.
"She saw you? Are you sure?"
Cinder nodded. "I was in the courtyard when the protests were going on. Queen Lavanna appeared on one of the upper balconies and she did something to the crowd, brainwashed or glamored them or whatever it's called. They all calmed down and stopped protesting. It was so eerie, like they all just forgot why they were there, that they hated her, and then they just left."
"Yes," Dr. Erland set the vial on the desk. "It becomes clear how she is able to keep her own people from rebelling against her, doesn't it?"
Cinder leaned forward, tapping her metal fingers against the desk. "Here's the thing, though. You said before that shells aren't affected by the lunar glamour, right? That's why she ordered them, us, to be killed?"
"That's right."
"But it did affect me. I trusted her, as much as anyone else, at least until my programming kicked in and took control." She watched as Dr. Erlon took off his hat, adjusted the brim, and pulled it back over his fluffy gray hair. "That shouldn't have happened, right? Because I'm a shell?"
"No," he said without conviction. "That shouldn't have happened."
He lifted himself from his chair and faced the floor-to-ceiling windows. A compulsion to reach out and snatch the vial off the desk surged to the tips of her fingers, but Cinder withheld it. The antidote, if it was an antidote, was meant for everyone. Gulping, she leaned back. "Doctor, you don't seem too surprised." He raised a hand and tapped his mouth with two fingers before slowly turning toward her.
"I may have misread your diagnostics."
"Lie." She squeezed her hands in her lap. "Or you just didn't tell me the truth." His eyebrows knit, but he didn't deny it. Cinder curled her fingers. "So I'm not lunar?"
No, you are most definitely lunar.
"Truth." She sulked in the chair, disappointed.
"I have been doing some research on your family, Miss Lin."
He must have seen her eyes brighten, because he quickly held up both hands.
"I mean your adopted family. Are you aware that your deceased guardian, Lin Garen, designed android systems?"
Cinder thought about the plaques and awards sitting on the mantle in Audrey's living room. "That sounds kind of familiar."
"Well, the year before your surgery, he unveiled an invention at the New Beijing Science Fair, a prototype. He called it a bioelectrical security system."
Cinder stared.
"A what?"
Standing, Dr. Erlon tinkered with a net screen until a familiar holograph flickered before them. He zoomed in on the representation of Cinder's neck, showing the small dark spot on her upper spine.
"This."
Cinder reached for the back of her neck, massaging.
"It is a device that ties in with a person's nervous system. It has two purposes. on an earthen, it prevents outside manipulation of their personal bioelectricity. Essentially, it makes it so they are immune to lunar control. Oppositely, when installed on a lunar, it keeps them from being able to manipulate the bioelectricity of others. It is as if you were to put a lock on the lunar gift.
Cinder shook her head, still rubbing.
A lock? On magic? Is that even possible?
Dr. Erland lifted a finger to her. It's not magic. Claiming to be magic only empowers them.
Fine, bioelectrical whatever. Is it possible?
Evidently so. The lunar gift is the ability to use your brain to output and control electromagnetic energy. To block this ability would require alteration of the nervous system as it enters the brainstem, and to do that, while still allowing full movement and sensation, would be... It's quite impressive. Ingenious, really.
Jaw-dropping, Cinder followed the doctor with her gaze as he slipped back into his chair.
He would have been rich.
If he had survived, perhaps he would have been.
The doctor turned off the screen. When he unveiled the invention at the fair, the prototype was, as yet, untested, and his contemporaries were skeptical. And rightfully so. He first needed to test it.
And for that, he needed a lunar.
Ideally, he needed both a lunar and an earthen subject, in order to test the two purposes separately. If he found an earthen subject, I have no idea, but clearly he did find you. And he did install his invention as a means of keeping you from using your gift. This explains why you have not had the use of your gift since your operation.
She bounced her foot, restless. You didn't misread my diagnostics. You knew this from the start, from the moment you walked into that lab room. You knew I was lunar, and I had this crazy lock, and you knew!
Dr. Erland wrung his hands. For the first time, Cinder noticed a gold band on his finger.
"What did you do to me?" she said, planting her feet and standing. "When you touched me and it hurt so bad and I passed out and then again today, what's causing it? What's happening to me?"
"Calm down, Miss Lin."
"Why? So you can lie to me some more, just like you lied to the prince?"
"If I have lied, it has only been to protect you."
"Protect me from what?"
Dr. Erland steepled his fingers.
"I understand you're confused."
"No, you don't understand anything. A week ago, I knew exactly who I was, what I was. And maybe that was a worthless cyborg, but at least I knew that. And now I'm lunar. I'm a lunar who supposedly might have magic, but can't use it. And now there's this insane queen who, for some reason, wants to kill me."
Spiking levels of adrenaline warned her control panel. Recommended course of action, slow, measured breaths. Counting, 1, 2, 3.
"Please calm down, Miss Lin. It is, in fact, a good thing that you were selected to receive this lock."
"I'm sure you're right. I just love being treated like a guinea pig, don't you know?"
"Like it or not, the lock has been beneficial to you."
"How?"
"If you would stop yelling, I would tell you."
She bit her lip and felt her breath stabilizing almost against her will.
"Fine. But tell me the truth this time."
Crossing her arms, she sat back down.
"Sometimes you are quite unnerving, Miss Lin."
Dr. Erland sighed, scratching at his temple.
"You see, manipulating bioelectricity comes so natural to lunars that it's virtually impossible to refrain from using it, especially at such a young age. Left to your own devices, you would have drawn too much attention to yourself. It would have been like tattooing lunar across your forehead. And even if you could have learned to control it, the gift is such a fundamental part of our internal makeup that tempering it can create devastating psychological side effects. Hallucinations, depression, even madness."
He pressed his fingertips together, waited.
"So you see, putting a lock on your gift protected you in many ways from yourself."
Cinder stared. Eyes boring.
"Do you understand how this was mutually beneficial?"
continued the doctor.
"Lin Garen had his subject, and you were able to fit in with Earthens without losing your mind."
Cinder slowly leaned forward.
"Our? Pardon?
Our. You said the gift is a fundamental part of our internal makeup.
The doctor drew himself up, adjusting the lapels of his coat.
Huh, did I?
You're lunar. He took off his hat and tossed it onto the desk. He looked smaller without it. Older.
Don't lie to me.
I wasn't going to, Miss Lin. Only trying to think how to explain in a way that will make you look less accusatory at me.
Setting her jaw, Cinder hopped out of the chair again and backed away from the desk. She stared at him, hard, as if there really might appear a lunar tattoo on his brow.
How can I believe anything you've said? How do I know you're not brainwashing me right now?
He shrugged.
If I were to go around glamoring people all day, I would at least make myself seem taller, don't you think?
She frowned, ignoring him. She was thinking of the queen on the balcony, how her opto-bionics had warned her of a lie, even when nothing had been said. Somehow, her brain was able to tell the difference between reality and illusion, even when her eyes couldn't. Squinting, she jutted a finger at the doctor.
You did use your mind control on me. When we met, you brainwashed me, just like the queen. You made me trust you.
Be fair, you were attacking me with a wrench.
Her anger wavered. Dr. Erland opened his palms to her.
I assure you, Miss Lin, in the 12 years that I have been on Earth, I have not abused the gift once, and I am paying the price for that decision every day. My mental stability, my psychological health, my very senses are failing me because I refuse to manipulate the thoughts and feelings of those around me. Not all lunars can be trusted. I know that as well as anyone. But you can trust me.
Cinder gulped and braced herself on the back of the chair.
Does Kai know?
Of course not. No one can know.
But you work in the palace. You see Kai all the time, and Emperor Raikin.
A flash of irritation sparked through Dr. Erlon's blue eyes.
Yes, and why should this upset you?
Because you're lunar!
As are you. Should I consider the prince's safety threatened because he asked you to the ball?
That's different.
Don't be dense, Miss Lin. I understand the prejudices. In many ways, they're understandable, even justified, given Earth's history with Luna. But it does not mean we are all greedy, self-serving devils. Believe me, there is not a person on this planet who would like to see Lavanna off the throne more than I would. I would kill her myself if I had the power.
The doctor's face had gone cherry pink, his eyes blazing.
All right,
Cinder pinched the chair's cushion until she felt the material puncture beneath her steel fingers.
I can accept that. Not all lunars are devils, and not all lunars are as easily brainwashed into following Lavanna.
But even of those who wish to defy her, how many of them risk their lives to run away? She paused, eyeing the doctor.
So, why did you?
Dr. Erlon moved, as if he were going to stand, but after a hesitation, his shoulders sank, deflated.
She killed my daughter.
Truth. Cinder pulled back.
The worst part, continued the doctor, is that had it been any other child, I would have felt it was right.
What? Why?
Because she was a shell.
He picked his hat off the desk and analyzed it while he spoke, his fingers tracing the herringbone pattern.
I agreed with the laws in the past, thought the shells were dangerous, that our society would fall apart if they were allowed to live. But not my little girl.
An ironic smile twisted up his lips.
After she was born, I wanted to run away, to bring her to Earth, but my wife was even more devoted to Her Majesty than I had been. She wanted nothing to do with the child. And so, my little crescent moon was taken away, like all the others.
He stuffed the hat back onto his head and squinted up at Cinder.
She would be about your age now.
Cinder came around the chair and perched on the edge of the seat.
I'm sorry. It was a long time ago, but I need you to understand, Miss Lin, what it was that someone went through to bring you here, to go so far as to hide your lunar gift, to protect you.
Cinder folded her arms, cowering into herself.
But why me? I'm not a shell. I wasn't in any danger. It doesn't make sense.
It will, I promise. Listen carefully, as this may be something of a shock to you.
A shock? You mean all that was just a precursor?
His eyes softened.
Your gift is returning, Miss Lin. I was able to manipulate your bioelectricity to temporarily overwhelm Lin Garen's prototype. That's what I did the first day you were here, when you lost consciousness, and the lock on your gift has been irreparably damaged because of it. With practice, you will be able to override the fail-safes on your own until you are in complete control of your gift again. I understand that it's painful when it comes on quickly like it did today, but those instances should be rare. Only during times of extreme emotional disturbance. Can you think of anything that may have set it off earlier?
Cinder's stomach flipped, recalling Kai's closeness in the elevator. She cleared her throat.
What you're saying is that I'm becoming lunar for real. Magic and all.
Dr. Erlon screwed up his lips, but didn't correct her again.
Yes. It will take some time, but you will eventually have all the use of your natural gift that you were born with.
He spun his fingers in the air.
Would you like to try and use it now? You may be able to, I'm not sure.
Cinder imagined a spark in her wires, something crackling at the base of her spine. She knew it was probably in her head, self-induced panic, but she couldn't be sure.
What did it feel like to be lunar, to have that kind of power?
She shook her head.
No, that's all right. I'm not ready for that.
A thin smile stretched across the doctor's lips, as if he were faintly disappointed.
Of course, when you're ready.
Hugging her arms around her waist, she inhaled a shaky breath. Doctor?
Yes?
Are you immune to letimosis like me?
Dr. Erland held her focus, unflinching.
Yes, I am.
Then why haven't you just used your own blood samples to find a cure? So many people have died, and the cyborg draft—
The wrinkles on his face softened.
I have been, Miss Lin. Where do you think the 27 antidotes we've already been through came from?
And none of them worked.
She tucked her feet beneath her chair, feeling small. Insignificant, again. So my immunity isn't the miracle you made it out to be. Her eyes fell on the vial, the Queen's antidote.
Miss Lin.
Meeting the doctor's gaze, Cinder found a glint there, barely contained giddiness, like the first time she'd met him.
You are the miracle I was looking for, he said, but you are right. It was not because of your immunity.
Cinder stared at him, waiting for him to explain. What else could be special about her? Had he actually been searching for the ingenious lock on her magic, Lin Garen's prototype? Her internal comm pinged before he could continue. She jolted, turning away from the doctor as green text skittered across her eyesight. Comm received from New Beijing District 29, Letimosis Quarantine. Lin Peony entered fourth stage of Letimosis at 17:24 on 18 August 126, T.E.
Miss Lin?
Her fingers trembled.
My sisters entered the fourth stage.
Her gaze settled on the vial atop Dr. Erlon's desk. He followed the look.
I see, he said. The fourth stage works quickly. There isn't much time to lose.
Reaching forward, he grasped the vial between his forefingers.
A promise is a promise.
Cinder's heart thumped against her ribs.
But don't you need it? To duplicate?
Standing, the doctor paced to the bookshelf and pulled a beaker stand toward him.
How old is she?
14.
Then I think this will be sufficient.
He poured a quarter of the antidote into the beaker. Corking the vial, he turned back to Cinder.
You do realize it came from Queen Levana. I do not know what her plan could be, but I know it will not be for the greater good of Earth. This could very well be a trick.
My sister is already dying.
He nodded and held it out to her.
That is what I thought.
Cinder stood up and took the vial, cradling it in her palm.
You sure?
On one condition, Miss Lin.
Gulping, she clutched the vial against her chest.
You must promise me not to come near this palace again, so long as Queen Lavanna is here.
Chapter 26. Prince Kai arrived at the meeting 17 minutes late. He was met with the disgruntled looks of Torin and four other government officials, all sitting at a long table, along with an additional dozen faces peering out from their respective net screens on the paneled wall before him. Ambassadors from every earthen country. The United Kingdom, the European Federation, the African Union, the American Republic, and Australia. One queen, two prime ministers, one president, one governor general, three state representatives, and two province representatives. Text along the bottom of the screens helpfully displayed their names, titles, and country affiliations.
"How kind of the young prince to grace us with his presence," said Torin, as the officials around the table stood to welcome Kai.
Kai waved Torin's comment away. "I thought you could use my guidance." On the wall of screens, Prime Minister Kamen of Africa grunted most unladylike. Everyone else remained silent. Kai moved to take his regular seat when Torin stopped him and gestured at the chair at the end of the table, the Emperor's chair. Jaw clenching, Kai switched seats. He looked up at the grid of faces. Although each of the world leaders was thousands of miles away, staring into their own wall of net screens, it felt as if their eyes were focused on him, disapproving. He cleared his throat, trying not to fidget.
"Is the conference link secure?"
he asked, the question bringing back his concerns over the direct communication chip Cinder had found inside Nancy. The screens in this room were equipped with DCOMs, so they could hold international meetings without fear of anyone listening in through the net. Had the chip inside Nancy been put there by one of Lavanna's cronies for the same reason? Secrecy? Privacy? If so, what exactly had she learned?
"Of course," said Torin. "The links have been verified for nearly 20 minutes, Your Highness. We were just discussing Earth's relationship with Luna when you deigned to join us."
Kai clasped his hands together. "Right. Now, is that the one where the dominatrix queen throws a tantrum and threatens war every time she doesn't get her way? That relationship?" No one laughed. Torin's gaze focused on Kai.
"Is this timing inconvenient for you, Your Highness?"
Kai cleared his throat.
"I apologize. That was inappropriate."
He met the faces of the Earth's leaders, watching him from thousands of miles away. He gripped his hands beneath the table, feeling like a child sitting in on his father's meetings.
"Obviously," said President Vargas from America, "the relationship between Earth and Luna has been strained for many years, and the rule of Queen Lavanna has only made things worse. We can't put blame on any one party, but the important thing is that we fix it before..."
"Before she starts a war," finished a province representative from South America, "as the young prince already observed."
"But if the reports on the net are not mistaken," said Governor General Williams of Australia, "communication between Earth and Luna has begun again. Can it be true that Lavanna is on Earth now? I could hardly believe the news when I heard it."
"Yes," said Torin, as all eyes switched to him. "The Queen arrived yesterday afternoon, and her head thaumaturge, Sybil Mira, has been a guest in our court for just over 2 weeks."
"Has Lavanna informed you of her purpose for this visit?" said Prime Minister Kamen.
"She claims that she wants to reach a peace agreement."
One of the American Republic reps guffawed. "I'll believe it when I see it." President Vargas ignored the comment.
"Quite suspicious timing, isn't it? So soon after..."
He didn't finish. No one looked at Kai.
"We agree," said Torin. "But we could not refuse the request when it came."
"It does seem she was always more apt to discuss an alliance with the Commonwealth than any of us," said President Vargas. "But her requests were always unsatisfactory. Have those requests changed?"
Kai watched from the corner of his eye as Torin's chest slowly expanded.
"No," he said. "To our knowledge, Her Majesty's requests have not changed. Her aim continues to be a marriage alliance with the Commonwealth's Emperor."
Although the faces in the room and on the screens tried to remain static, the discomfort ratcheted around them. Kai gripped his hands so tight that crescent moons were left from his fingernails. He had always despised the diplomacy of these meetings, everyone thinking the same thing, no one brave enough to say it. And of course they would all be sympathetic to Kai's fate, and yet glad that it wasn't any of them. They would be angry that Queen Lavanna could infiltrate any earthen country with her dictatorship, and yet certain that it would be an improvement over infiltrating Earth with her army.
"The Commonwealth's position," continued Torin, "has also not changed."
This did seem to jolt the crowd.
"You won't marry her," said Queen Camilla of the United Kingdom, the wrinkles on her forehead deepening.
Kai squared his shoulders in defense. "My father was firm in his decision to avoid such an alliance, and I believe his reasons are as applicable today as they were last week, or last year, or 10 years ago. I must consider what is best for my country."
"Have you told this to Lavanna?"
"I have not lied to her."
"And what will be her next move?"
said Prime Minister Bromstad of Europe, a fair-haired man with kind eyes.
"What else?" said Kai. "She intends to add more bargaining chips to the pile until we cave."
Stares clashed through the screens. Torn's lips had gone white, his eyes urging Kai to tread lightly. Kai could guess that Torn hadn't intended to mention the antidote, at least until they could plan their next move. But Letimosis was a pandemic that affected all of them. They at least had a right to know that an antidote might exist, assuming Lavanna hadn't lied to him. Kai took in a deep breath, splaying his palms on the table. "Lavanna claims to have found a cure for Letimosis." The net screen seemed to crackle with surprise, though the gathered leaders were all too stunned to speak. "She brought a single dosage with her, and I've passed it off to our research team. We won't know if it's a true antidote until they've had a chance to study it. If it is real, then we need to find out if we can replicate it."
"And if we can't replicate it?"
Kai looked at the Australian Governor General. He was older than Kai's father had been. They were all so much older than him.
"I don't know," he said. "But I will do what has to be done for the Commonwealth."
He enunciated Commonwealth very carefully. True, they were an alliance 6 countries and a single planet strong. But they all had their own loyalties, and he would not forget his.
"Even then," said Torin, "we can yet hope to make her see reason and convince her to sign the Treaty of Bremen without a marriage alliance."
"She will refuse," said a state representative from the EF. "We mustn't fool ourselves. She is as stubborn..."
"Of course. The Commonwealth's imperial family is not the only royal bloodline she could harbor hopes of marrying into,"
said the African state representative. He said this knowing that his own country could not be a choice, as it was not a monarchy. Any marriage bond would be too superficial, too transient. He continued,
"I think we should explore all possible options so that we can be sure to have an offer prepared, no matter what Lavanna decides to do next. An offer that we, as a group, feel would best benefit the citizenry of our entire planet."
Kai had followed the group's attention to Queen Camilla of the UK, who had an unmarried son in his early 30s, closer to Lavanna's age than Kai was. He noted how passive the Queen was trying to appear, and had to keep himself from looking smug. It felt nice to turn the tables. And yet, politically, there was no doubt that Kai was the best option in Queen Lavanna's eyes. The prince from the United Kingdom was the youngest of 3 siblings and may never become king. Kai, on the other hand, would be coronated next week.
"What if she refuses anyone else?"
said Queen Camilla, lifting an eyebrow that had seen too many youth surgeries over the years. When no one responded to the question, she continued,
"I don't mean to raise undue alarm, but have you considered that her reason for coming to Earth might be to secure this alliance through force? Perhaps she intends to brainwash the young prince into marrying her."
Kai's stomach flipped. He could see his unease mirrored in the faces of the other diplomats.
"Could she do that?"
he asked. When no one was quick to answer, he turned to Torin. It took far, far too long for Torin to shake his head, looking frighteningly uncertain.
"No," he said. Perhaps in theory, but no, in order to keep up the ruse, she could never leave your side. As soon as you were no longer under her influence, you could prove that the marriage wasn't legitimate. She wouldn't risk that.
You mean, we hope she wouldn't risk it, said Kai, not feeling very comforted.
What about Lavanna's daughter, Princess Winter? Said President Vargas. Has there been any discussion of her?
Stepdaughter, said Torin. And what should we discuss in regards to the Lunar Princess?
Why can't we form a marriage alliance with her? Said Queen Camilla. She can't be any worse than Lavanna.
Torin folded his hands atop the table.
Princess Winter was of another mother, and her father was a mere palace guard. She has no royal blood.
But Luna might still honor a marriage alliance through her, said Kai. Wouldn't they?
Torin sighed, looking like he wished Kai had kept his mouth shut.
Politically, perhaps, but it does not change the fact that Queen Lavanna is in the difficult position of needing to marry and produce an heir who will continue the bloodline. I do not think she will agree to marry off her stepdaughter so long as she requires a suitable marriage arrangement.
And there is no hope, said the African Prime Minister, that the Lunars will ever accept Princess Winter as a queen?
Only if you can convince them to give up their superstitions, said Torin, and we all know how deeply those are ingrained in their culture. Otherwise, they will always insist on an heir of the royal bloodline.
And what if Lavanna never has an heir? What will they do then?
Kai slid his gaze to his advisor and raised an eyebrow.
I'm not sure, Torin answered. I'm sure the royal family has plenty of distant cousins who would be eager to stake their claim to the throne.
So if Lavanna must marry, said the South American representative, and she will marry only a Commonwealth emperor, and the Commonwealth emperor refuses to marry her, what then? We are at a stalemate.
Perhaps, said Governor General Williams, she will make good on her threats.
Torin shook his head.
If her desire were to start a war, she's had plenty of opportunities.
It seems clear, shot back the Governor General, that her desire is to be Empress, but we don't know what she has planned if you won't.
Actually, we do have an idea, said President Vargas, his voice heavy. I'm afraid we no longer need to speculate if Lavanna intends to start a war against Earth. Our sources lead me to believe that war is not only likely, but imminent.
An uneasy rustle shifted through the room.
If our theories are correct, said President Vargas, Lavanna is planning to move against Earth within the next 6 months.
Kai leaned forward, fidgeting with the collar of his shirt.
What theories?
It seems Queen Lavanna is building an army.
Confusion swept through the room.
Certainly the moon has had an army for some time, said Prime Minister Bromstad. It is hardly news, nor is it controversial. We cannot request that they forego the keeping of an army entirely, much as we might like to.
This is not the moon's normal army, soldiers and thaumaturges, said President Vargas, nor is it like any army we keep on Earth. Here are some photographs that our orbiting operatives were able to obtain.
The president's image faded and was replaced with a fuzzy picture, as if taken from very far away. Satellite photos taken without sunlight. Nevertheless, in the grainy picture, Kai could make out rows and rows of men standing. He squinted, and another picture flickered onto the screen, closer up, showing the backs of four of the men from up above. But Kai noticed, with a shock, these were not men. Their shoulders were too wide, too hunched. Their barely discernible profiles too stretched. Their backs were covered in what appeared to be fur.
Another picture came on the screen.
It showed a half a dozen of the creatures from the front, their faces across between man and beast. Their noses and jaws protruded awkwardly from their heads, their lips twisted into perpetual grimaces. White spots erupted from their mouths. Kai could not see them clearly, could not tell for sure, but they gave him the distinct impression of fangs.
What are these creatures? Said Queen Camilla.
Mutants,
answered President Vargas. We believe they are genetically engineered Lunas. This is a project that we assume has been going on for many decades. We have estimated 600 of them in this Holden alone, but we suspect there are more. Likely in the network of lava tubes beneath the moon's surface. There could be thousands, tens of thousands for all we know.
And do they possess magic?
It was a hesitant question posed by the Canadian province rep. The picture disappeared, showing the American president again.
We do not know. We have not been able to see them train or do anything other than stand in formation and march in and out of the caverns.
They are Luna, said Queen Camilla. If they are not dead, then they possess magic.
We have no proof that they killed their ungifted infants, interrupted Torin. And as exciting as it is to look at these pictures and create wild speculations, we must keep in mind that Queen Levana has not yet attacked Earth, and we have no evidence that these creatures are intended for such an attack.
What else could they be intended for? Said Governor General Williams.
Manual labor? Said Torin,
daring anyone to deny the possibility. The Governor General sniffed but said nothing.
We should, of course, be prepared should a war come to pass. But in the meantime, our priority needs to be forming an alliance with Luna, not alienating it with paranoia and distrust.
No, said Kai, propping his chin on his fist. I think this is the perfect time for paranoia and distrust.
Torin scowled.
Your Highness,
it seems you've all missed the very obvious point of those pictures.
President Vargas puffed out his chest.
What do you mean?
You say they've probably been building this army for decades, perfecting whatever science they've used to create these creatures?
So it would seem.
Then why have we only noticed it now?
He waved his hand at the screen where the images had been.
Hundreds of them, standing out in the open, as if they have nothing better to do, waiting to have their pictures taken.
He folded his arms on top of the table, watching as uncertain expressions turned toward him.
Queen Levana wanted us to see her spook army. She wanted us to take notice.
You think she's trying to threaten us?
Said Prime Minister Kamen. Kai shut his eyes, seeing the rows of beasts fresh in his mind.
No, I think she's trying to threaten me.
Chapter 27. The hover rumbled to a stop outside the quarantine. Cinder flew out of the side hatch and immediately reeled back, covering her nose with her elbow. Her gut heaved at the stench, rotting flesh intensified by the steamy afternoon heat. Just outside the warehouse's entrance, a group of medroids were loading dead bodies into a hover to be carted away. Their forms bloated and discolored, each with a red slit in the wrist. Cinder looked away, keeping her eyes averted, and held her breath as she slid past them into the warehouse. The sunlight turned from blaring to murky, caught by the green sheeting on the windows along the ceiling. The quarantine had been near empty before. Now, it was overflowing with victims, every age, every gender. Buffeting fans on the ceiling did little to dispel the sweltering heat or the smell of death. The air was heavy with it. Medroids buzzed between the beds, but there were not enough of them to tend to all the sick. Cinder slipped down an aisle, gasping for shallow breaths against her sleeve. She spotted Peony's green brocade blanket and ran to the foot of the bed.
Peony!
When Peony didn't stir, she reached out and placed a hand on her shoulder. The blanket was soft, warm, but the bulk beneath it didn't move. Shaking, Cinder grasped the edge of the comforter and pulled it back. Peony whimpered, a mild protest, which sent relieved chills across Cinder's arms. She slumped down beside the bed.
Stars, Peony, I came as soon as I heard.
Peony squinted up at her, eyes bleary. Her face was ashen, her lips peeling. The dark splotches on her neck had begun to fade to lavender beneath the surface of her ghostly skin. Eyes on Cinder. She pulled her arm out from beneath the blanket and spread out her fingers, displaying their blue-black tips and the yellowish tinge of her nails.
I know, but it's going to be all right.
Still panting, Cinder unbuttoned the pocket on the side of her cargo pants and pulled out the glove that normally lived on her right hand. The vial was in one of the fingers, protected.
I brought something for you. Can you sit up?
Peony pulled her hand into a loose fist and tucked it again beneath the blanket. Her eyes were hollow. Cinder didn't think she'd heard her.
Peony?
A ping echoed in Cinder's head. Her display showed an incoming message from Audrey, and the familiar surge of anxiety that came with it clamped Cinder's throat. She dismissed the message.
Peony, listen to me. I need you to sit up. Can you do that?
Mom,
Peony whispered, spittle collecting at the corner of her lips.
She's at home. She doesn't know
that you're dying. But of course, Audrey did know. The comm would have gone to her, too. Pulse racing, Cinder bent over Peony and slid her arm beneath her shoulder.
Come on, I'll help you.
Peony's expression didn't change, the blank corpse stare. But she did let out a pained groan when Cinder lifted her up.
I'm sorry, she said, but I need you to drink this.
Another ping, another message from Audrey. This time, irritation welled up in Cinder, and she shut off her netlink, blocking any more incoming messages.
It's from the palace. It might help. Do you understand?
She kept her voice low, worried that the other patients might hear, might riot against her. But Peony's gaze remained empty.
A cure, Peony,
she hissed against her ear.
An antidote.
Peony said nothing. Her head drooped against Cinder's shoulder. Her body had gone limp, but she was light as a wooden doll. Cinder's throat felt coated in sand as she stared into Peony's empty eyes. Eyes looking past her, through her.
No, Peony, didn't you hear me?
Cinder pulled Peony fully against her and uncorked the vial.
You have to drink this.